This is Nancy Emerson on behalf of the Mill Valley Historical Society and the Mill Valley Public Library's Oral History Program. I'm here in the Mill Valley Library's recording studio on November 16, 2018, with Susan Reynolds, a Mill Valley resident and a longtime educator with a twist. Susan's particular claim to fame is her role with the Edna McGuire School Children's Garden. Susan, I'm so glad we can add your oral history to our collection. Are you ready to begin?
I certainly am.
Good. Let's start with where and when you were born and what was your birth name.
Okay. I was born at Richmond Cottage Hospital and actually lived in the Kensington area of the Berkeley Hills. My birth name was Susan Jane Stuerwald. I was born October 25th, 1940.
Great. And Richmond Cottage Hospital is located in, or was located?
It was close to the Standard Oil refinery. I think my father was a chemical engineer with Standard Oil.
Okay. In Richmond, California.
Richmond, California. Yes.
All right. Will you talk about your early days, who your parents were? You told us about your father some, where you lived, and also where you went to school.
Okay. We lived in Kensington. My father was a chemical engineer with Standard Oil. My mother was a hospital dietitian. I attended the schools in El Cerrito Harding Elementary, Portola Junior High, and El Cerrito High School. And actually, I have lived here in Mill Valley for 55 years and taught in the Mill Valley School District for over 30.
Great. Let's see. I don't think I heard your mother's name.
Oh, I'm sorry. She was Alice Irene Stuerwald.
Great. And did you have siblings?
Yes, I have. I had two brothers, Frederick and Paul Stuerwald, and my father was Louis Daniel Stuerwald. My mother was Alice Irene. Great. So, yes.
Great. Okay. And university. Where did you go to university?
I attended San Jose State University, where the focus was on child-centered, activity-based learning, which actually became the theme of my teaching career in Mill Valley, in the Mill Valley School District, as well as kind of my summers in the 80s when I was teaching at UC Berkeley. I taught curriculum development for Tolman Hall School of Education, which included a very important interdisciplinary approach of integrating subjects, kind of hands-on approach to learning and the tribe's affective domain curriculum.
The Tolman School, was that within Berkeley?
That's the School of Education within Berkeley.
Okay.
And
okay.
I was invited. One of my supervisors, I had often over the years had student teachers, and I had a supervisor from Dominican University who then transferred to Berkeley, and I was invited to teach in her program in the summers.
That's wonderful.
It was an exciting program.
That's great. So you started your teaching career not in Mill Valley, is that right?
No, I didn't. Actually, after I graduated from San Jose, I did teach 1 year in Silicon Valley, and after that year, I married, and we moved. My husband said to me, he said, well, where would you like to live? We were fortunate to have that option. And because as a child, my family had come to Marin County to go hiking and picnicking over the years, and we had many family friends here, this is where I wanted to live. I had so many wonderful childhood memories of hiking in Mill Valley and on Mount Tam.
Great. So you would have moved to Mill Valley in the 70s?
I moved to Mill Valley in 1963.
Oh, 63. Okay.
I moved in 19... We were married in June of 1963, and we moved to Mill Valley, and we built our home and moved in April of 64.
Wow.
And actually, I live in that house still today. I'm apparently not a mover, in that respect. I was hired by the Mill Valley School District in 1964 to teach a first grade class at Homestead School. And I was kind of young and enthusiastic, and apparently I could do no wrong. So essentially, when the principal, Betty Grimm, observed my teaching math and Spanish, I was a keeper. Anyway, I was hired in January of 64 by Palmer Collins, who was the superintendent at that time. So I actually, can I tell you a little bit about Homestead School?
Definitely.
Homestead School in those days in the little valley of Homestead had a hot dog room next to my classroom. And it seemed the hub of parent activity. And it seemed to me there were more horses on the street being ridden on the street and dogs on the playground than there were children attending the school. Or so it seemed to me. It was just a delightful atmosphere. And it was a wonderful way to start in Mill Valley.
Wow. So do you have a sense of what the school population was at that time?
Oh, you mean of the entire district?
No, of Homestead.
Homestead was a tiny school. I think there was probably one class at each grade level. There were probably maybe six teachers altogether. Wow. And I was there because, and the other teachers there were veterans. I mean, these ladies had been there forever. So I was kind of this new young thing, and it was a kick.
You were probably both learning from each other.
We were.
The older teachers from you and you from them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it was Margaret Olney and Florentine Chase and Mrs. Dempster. I mean, these were classic teachers that had been teaching for 40 years already. So it was... But as far as a location, it was a small school with just the residential area all around it and a very active parent and supportive parent community.
What a great start.
It was.
Yeah, but then you moved on to a different school.
Well, actually, I did retire. I took early retirement after 2 years. Not many people. I thought that's what I was doing. Well, interestingly enough, I taught at Homestead for 2 years, and until the birth of my son, Kurt Robert Nickerson, in 1995, and then my daughter, Jill Alice Nickerson, in 1964, that I was a stay-at-home mom for about 5 years. I was canvassing neighborhoods for the Mill Valley Middle School bond election to build that. And I participated in AAUW groups, and I was president of the Tamalpais Sunny Hills Guild and an active member of the Mill Valley Tennis Club.
Whoa.
So as long as two children, we had a busy life. But and I returned to teaching kindergarten at Park School in 1990. And so the next year, 1990, whoops.
Yeah.
That was wrong. It was 1970.
Okay.
The next year, after teaching there 1 year, I transferred to Old Mill School because I had a number of friends that taught there and ended up teaching at Old Mill School during the 70s, at Strawberry Point School during the 80s, and Ed McGuire School during the 90s until I retired in 97.
Great. So back to Old Mill School, were you also teaching kindergarten there?
At Old Mill, I taught first and second. At Strawberry Point, I taught first, second, and then transitioned. First, second, third, fourth, and fifth. There, I taught several combined classes.
What's a combined class?
Well, a combined class is two grade levels. So I taught, I enjoyed that because I found it very, the different ranges within the class intriguing. And so I taught a number of several years, a 2-3 combination. And 1 year I taught a 4-5 combination. So I did have some students a number of times in a repeated fashion, but it didn't seem to disturb the parents. Mm-hmm. It really worked well.
It sounds like you taught all grade levels in the elementary school.
Yes.
Range. And did you have a favorite?
Well, I loved third grade. I always had adored first grade. And first grade, you do social skills and management. And then second grade, you add on the academic. But third grade, we just did all kinds of wonderful things. I mean, the kids could write plays and put on plays. And I guess I would say third grade was probably my favorite.
Great. There's another aspect of third grade that I think you really owned. Maybe two aspects. I'm thinking of the Mill Valley history.
Oh.
That gets them embedded in the curriculum for third graders.
Right? Exactly. Mill Valley history is third grade territory, and we really devised all kinds of. Let's get out and see Mill Valley. Let's visit the Outdoor Art Club. Let's visit the library, the history room. We went to the older buildings in Mill Valley and sketched them. Children wrote plays about the early settlement in Mill Valley. It was wonderful fun. I'm only sorry that we didn't go to the Mill Valley or the library's history walk or the history society's walks. I've done that since I retired. I thought I knew, but I have a lot to learn.
There's plenty of history to last us our lifetimes, I think.
Oh, I think. Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, the other aspect of teaching that maybe it's time to get into is integrated your interest in hands-on learning, mm-hmm. and integrative learning, and that was the famous garden.
I think so.
Are you ready to talk about that?
Well, I have, with just one little backup, which I discovered while I was taking a look at my own personal biography, and that is that I realized in growing up, I used to round the children up in my neighborhood, and do and come up with garden activities, catching pollywogs or garden activities at home growing up. And so I loved being with children. And I liked all the areas of the curriculum. But the garden is definitely, is memorable. To me, it's one of the most memorable experiences in my life.
And part of your fame, I think, your local fame.
Oh, dear.
Right?
Maybe. I'm not sure about that. But I certainly was known in the school.
Yeah,
and I guess television. When you come to think that the videotape done by one of the master gardeners was on television a lot, so you'd walk into the grocery store and there'd be, oh, you're the lady on, you're the garden lady. Anyway, but the Mill Valley Children's Garden from the beginning, I'd love to.
Please tell us how it got started.
Okay, well, Edna McGuire School was closed and rented out, and on the and the teachers were over at Strawberry Point. On the Edna McGuire site, there was a third of an acre garden that was established in combination with several organizations, but Growing Enterprises of Marin was an organization that worked with developmentally challenged adults to help teach them marketable skills. So the board of directors for that had a Green Gulch connection with Yvonne Rand and Wendy Johnson and her husband, Peter Rednick. And then the horticulture store, or the garden store downtown, was Smith and Hawken, and they needed a place to test their gardens. I mean, a test garden for their tulips that they had collected from around the world. So as you can see, we had multiple surprises that would happen. We didn't know what was coming up out of the ground. Anyway, so while Ed McGuire was rented out, this garden was developed. And when it came time, the faculty at Strawberry had a staff meeting in which to prepare, really, for moving back and transitioning back to the Edna McGuire site.
And why was it that it was going to become a school once again?
Well, there was a great school population increase, so they needed more room, and this was wonderful for the district. They were needing to reopen the school, and it was over 400 people and over 400 children in that school, so it was significantly larger than Strawberry.
Mm-hmm. And that was 19. Sorry, this was been running up to the 1990 school year.
Yes, this was in the spring of 1990.
Okay,
and what happened at the faculty meeting was kind of interesting, in that Mike Patrick, our school business manager, proposed blacktopping over the garden because he felt that the teachers already had their plates full. They were already very, very busy, and they didn't need to deal with the garden. Many of the faculty members actually were absent the day that he did this presentation. And so there was a reaction to Mike's proposal. And basically teachers were saying, well, what do you mean? We're going to miss an outstanding hands-on learning lab for the children in this city. And, the staff questioned the district's thinking on this, and there was a very lively discussion, as you can imagine. Well, I was just a bit outspoken, I'm afraid. So what happened at the next faculty meeting, it was attended by everyone and by the full staff, who was well aware of the situation and the possibilities. So I said nothing, and everyone else on the staff spoke up. I was thrilled. I couldn't believe it. And everyone was really on board on the topic.
Excuse me for interrupting, but had you lobbied before this next faculty meeting to get people to speak up?
I possibly did that.
Okay.
I chatted with all of the faculty and told them what had been proposed and what did they think about the possibilities. Would they be interested in a buy-in? Would they be what was their reaction?
Good.
And it was very positive. So truly, I didn't have to say a thing.
Good.
I was very concerned that I was going to make a fool of myself, and I didn't have to.
Uh-huh. And how did the school administration react to this uprising?
Well, they listened, and then we met with the superintendent and the business manager, and they suggested that we have a study group to talk about what options there were and how that would look. Well, basically, the district decided that they would not help us with this project. So we were given one CCF of water and 1 year, and the rest is really history. I think that they wondered whether this would happen.
So it sounds like you had this meeting and studied the options, and they maybe grudgingly agreed to give you a chance.
Well, they just, I mean, here we were in full force.
Yeah.
Yes, it was sort of, we can't be involved in it. We don't have the money for it. And it's still basically the way it is pretty much today. But there are different sources, and people ask for grants, and there's been different funding and help that has come forward. But and I will say that the district maintenance guy, Don, was just at our side. He put in, we had a third of an acre, one shed for tools, and one spigot for water. Well, that didn't work too well, or just didn't have much in the way of possibilities. So Don installed maybe a dozen spigots for us, helped us set up different areas within the within the garden. But so we moved to Strawberry Point, or we moved from Strawberry Point to Edna campus in the fall of 1990. And what's wonderful is that Wendy Johnson and her husband Peter proposed that we plant a good portion of the garden in pumpkins, so that when we arrived in the fall, there would be pumpkins for all of the children. So the staff went over in the spring and planted pumpkins, and we worked on, you know, watering them and maintaining them throughout the summer. So that was our arrival gift to the school.
That's beautiful.
Yes, yeah. it was really memorable.
Now, who were Wendy Johnson and her husband? Were they parents?
I did have their child, who's a firefighter here in Marin County now. But they were parents. They were also on the staff at Green Gulch Farm.
Okay, that's the connection.
And they're horticulturists. Her husband's a horticulturist. She's written some rather wonderful horticultural books. Yeah. But they were very, very supportive in helping us with the transition.
So you knew in the spring that you were going to get this opportunity and you'd have to make a go of it. And so you worked on the garden over the summer. And then I'm thinking in the fall you had to develop a plan for how you were going to use this garden. How did that come about?
Well, that came about, Nancy, in the form of a mentor grant that I received from the district. I made a proposal to the district that satisfied some aspect of the administration. I proposed putting together a handbook. It was an interesting experience as technology was just getting underway in the classroom at that point. But we put together a garden handbook, a binder for every teacher, which gave them lots of background information. Answered questions that they would need to have. And it was kind of an ongoing diary or notebook as to the progress and what happened with their classroom in the garden, with their garden space, how they changed it, and reactions and photographs. The binder handbook was one aspect of the mentor grant. The second aspect was proposed by our then superintendent of schools, Patrick McDonough. Patrick really saw the potential in the garden. And I had several long conversations with him, and he said, it is so important. This is such a gem. This is such a beautiful situation. But he said, you can't keep it to yourselves. He said, it's so important for you to come up with a plan on how to share this with the entire public school population in Mill Valley. And in that respect, he subsidized having substitutes come in and take over for the Edna teachers who worked in the garden with teachers from around the district. We had, for 2 weeks in the fall, and 2 weeks in the spring, we conducted field trips to our garden. And teachers in the district signed up for an hour and a half to bring their children over for an hour and a half to two. And we gave them a whole orientation to the garden. We had the kids dig. We had the kids plant. We had the kids harvest. We had the kids work with the worm farm. And we had them build huge compost piles in which we cooked eggs.
Wow.
So it was something that, and we went on until I retired. And apparently it is no longer, it's a possibility of reintroducing that as a way of sharing, although other schools do have small gardens.
Yeah, I wondered if that inspired gardens at the other elementary schools.
I think it did. It really did. I know that Old Mill was wanting to have a garden but couldn't because there's a capped sulfur spring there. And I believe Tam Valley, Strawberry, and Park have gardens. And apparently the one at Strawberry is quite nice. I haven't seen them recently, so. But I think it did, especially a kindergarten first through third classes came to on the field trips. And they did it. A class might come once a year or twice a year, and they did this for a number of years. So it was really, it was a nice way to share and to kind of inspire people.
Just backing up a bit, the first year you were proving yourselves to the superintendent, but then something happened, I gather, that you actually got his support and other district support so that you could integrate it or no?
Not overly. What happened, in addition to the mentor grant, we planned out an administrative process for the garden, and we called it GAB. Oh, I'm going like that. We had the GAB, Garden Advisory Board. Oh, good. I'm spacing
that
on
makes
that
sense.
One. Garden Advisory Board, which were faculty and parents, and we met monthly, and we had a steering committee that met monthly, and we had I was a founding director, and I had a co-director that was a parent, Stevie Bass, who was actually a recipe designer for Sunset Magazine, but who had wonderful PR connections and was a real hands-on person in the garden. And then we had Suzanne Frazier after Stevie left. Suzanne became the co-director, and she was very active. And after I, as faculty, Bill Lescohair and John Rojas were directors. But we really had, we met monthly, and then we also had four really active faculty meetings four times a year. We also had Life Lab, which is a science curriculum out of Santa Cruz, came and before school would start each year, would work with the teachers on science curriculum. So that was wonderful. But we did have an organized group of combined teachers and parents, and we were fortunate because we just had an unbelievably interested and involved parent community. It could not have been more wonderful. And yet we all really worked hard. I mean, I taught full time, and then I was out in the garden until 6 o'clock at night. And a number of teachers were. And teachers at that time were also taking the children out on a regular basis during the week. And I don't know how that happens nowadays, which is really a much larger school. But we were fortunate size-wise. There were 400, I think, in the school, but we had such an unbelievably active, an active group that really bought into the garden and had a lot of enthusiasm and energy. We were very fortunate.
Yeah. Well, or you, maybe it was more than fortunate. Maybe it was hard work too.
Well,
right?
it wasn't. No, it was indeed. I mean, it was because there was organizing and managing a lot from not only the curriculum, and people used the curriculum across the board. I mean, we would have assemblies in the garden or small groups, like we'd go out and practice recorder. Kids would go out in small groups and draw and write poetry, write in their journals. Just ever so many ways. They'd go out and we would have garden PE. We'd go out and do our stretches and our aerobic exercise. So, you know, I mean, it was just, there were two, the faculty could see endless possibilities, and the parents just really enjoyed this.
I would think in the 90s, early 90s, this was a distinguishing factor for that school. The parents would may choose that school over the others because of the garden.
Well, they did. It was an internationally, more an internationally diverse school. Mm-hmm. But the garden was really a draw. It became, in fact, I met someone last week whose relatives go there, and they're like, oh, yeah, there is this identity, a really, really wonderful identity with the school. But, you know, we did have the administration, and I had the Mentor Project and Life Lab, which were wonderful. But and the curriculum across the board, across subjects across the curriculum were just, it made it very rich. And also, it was size-wise, it could happen. Mm-hmm. But the expanded activities, I mean, there were grade groups that would go in the garden. There we had assemblies and concerts, you know, where the children, concerts and sales of produce and flowers. We had, and crafts fairs, which they still have. So it was unlimited, and it was something that the teachers could see. And another thing that what we realized was that the benefiting of the children, there were for children who weren't necessarily. Didn't necessarily excel in the classroom, and who marched to a different drummer. It was the garden became a very wonderful place for them to shine. You know it, and so often it was interesting because their parents would show up and they'd be, you know, they were so proud that their parents were there, and then for them, it really was positive. So that was
It must have been hard to leave. In 1997, it was this garden idea had blossomed and was bearing fruit.
Well, you know what Pat McDonough said to me. He said, "Susan, this will only be a success if you let it be passed on. If you stand back and you know, I mean, because it was a bit of a challenge with teaching full time, and I was raising a grandson who was with me for 8 years, and so it was." It was a bit like, okay, here. But what he said is that, you know, put the pieces in place that will carry the garden on. And that's what we, you know, would hope. So from my colleagues that left 8 and 10 and 12 years later, it was still going. Mm-hmm. But there were parents, I think, a very, very dedicated parent leadership. Lee Budish was very involved in the 80s. The 2000s.
Yeah.
And Ronnie Sharp was another parent who, the second their kids went into kindergarten, they were involved ongoing. But then as everything moves on, so since there's the new school, they do have, they've hired teachers who, science teachers to be in, garden teachers to be in.
Okay.
They had a full-time garden teacher for about 4 years, and she's currently on maternity leave with her first child and about to have a second. Huh? So, but there are educators who are now working in the garden who are credentialed. And they share a contract, and so I met them the other day, and it was interesting to see how they're carrying on. It's different. Christy Herman, my colleague, who I've known forever and ever since our old mill days together, she said to me that founding a garden is different than inheriting one. There is a legacy, it's theirs, and there's a gut-level dedication. And she, in my conversations with her recently, over talking about our wonderful garden, it's like that initial staff was, they really bought into it. They were dedicated. And their enthusiasm spilled over to the parent community and the neighbors. The neighbors would come in with, oh, well, we have a dahlia tree for you, or I think Thelma Cornish, these dear elderly neighbors of the school who'd lived there forever on Shell Road, would come with surprises from their garden. Oh, please think about putting this in your welcoming garden, in the main gate of the garden, or this is for the children to plant wherever they want. And but there was a lot of identity just within the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So that's...
Well, now taking that to maybe the other extreme, the garden was an award winner, and you were an award winner, right? There were some honors
yes.
that you received?
Yeah, there were some areas that we received some recognition. Let me see. There was the County Golden Bell, and that's an award given by the county, and I was hoping to get the exact wording of what it is they were awarding, but it was for outstanding achievement at a school. And there was a committee from the county that came and scrutinized our garden and looked at it carefully and interviewed me, it seemed like forever, and also talked with all the staff. So they really got a sense that there was dedication, there was a really strong ethic here going for this learning outdoor learning center. Mm-hmm. And so we received a bell, a beautiful bell, but we have to find it. That's my search,
okay.
My current search.
I think it got lost in the rebuilding.
Yeah,
project.
We have to locate that. But we received a beautiful bronze bell, and there was a lovely dedication dinner given by the county, and I had to... They wanted to know how the garden started, so of course, they found out.
I told their story.
And then in 1993, Stevie Bass, my co-director, had many connections with publishers. So she called one of her, she called Better Homes and Gardens, and she said, oh, by the way, we'd like you to come and see our garden. And so they sent a photographer and a writer out, and they photographed our garden, and it appeared in the Better Homes and Gardens. And what I thought was quite interesting here, that we had so many natural things in the garden. They brought little plastic plants for the children to stand and hold. Oh. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, they don't get it. I should have said, now, as a retired teacher now, I'd say, hey, folks, come on, stand back a minute now. Just take a look at what we have here,
right.
And the kids will lead you on to just beautiful,
natural
examples
yeah.
of what they do in the garden. Anyway, but that, interestingly enough, that recognition led us to, that led us to receiving a call from the National Horticulture Association. And I was invited to go to Washington, D.C. and do a presentation at the first ever symposium of children's gardens in the U.S. And so I did a presentation, and it was on, well, how do you do it? How do you put this together? How do you finance it? How do you collect? How do you capture the community's attention and and mm-hmm. the buy-in? So I did a slideshow. I had gone to the top of Horse Hill and photographed the San Francisco in the background, and then dropped down to our garden. And when I showed this in Washington, D.C., they did not believe this was a public school. You are kidding me. They would not believe me. It was so, the garden was so stunning and just so like, oh my heavens. There were hawks soaring overhead. Mm-hmm. There were horses running on Horse Hill. There were snakes wrapped up in our plastic mesh that had to be we had to operate on the mesh to relieve them. But I mean, it was like at the symposium, there was disbelief that this was actually a school garden because it was so, so beautiful. I mean, I don't mean that in that, but I mean really a wonderful example of what can happen.
Right. And hopefully that inspired more.
Yeah,
gardens.
Well, I think so. I mean, I had a lot of communication with people. They would email me, and I would get letters and where they wanted information. They wanted to samples. They wanted a copy of our handbook. They wanted to know how we set it up, how we organized. So that was really something, you know. I mean, things like that happened. But for me, the biggest reward was working with the children in the garden. Mm-hmm. Because it's such a natural, and they just couldn't get enough, and so that to me was huge, and the fact that we were so fortunate in our timing, with the transition, with parents being so open and enthusiastic, that it really was probably an unusual situation, but a very special one. So, there are many, many stories of, we had master gardeners help us in the garden. Tony Mekasich, who still is coming to the garden and helping. But Tony, and then there was, and I do not know her name, but she's the one that did the video she videoed the garden and all the different activities that the children participated in. And interestingly enough, I think it was given to a local television station. So anytime there was sort of a gape in their programming, they would put this video on. And it became quite funny that the children around town would, or you'd be in the grocery store and they'd say, oh, you're the television lady, or we saw you. And, or going into the local supermarket, the parents, you know, would stop you and say, well, I've got to tell you what we talked about at dinner last night.
That's nice.
Uh-huh. So, you know, it was like, you wouldn't believe the conversation that our family had. So that, to me, and the contact that I have off and on with the former students in Mill Valley. But there were just all kinds of funny things, too. I mean, just little stories about...
Do you want to tell any of those stories?
It was interesting, and it's an example of the parent community, and that was when we first moved into the garden. Okay, it's this test garden, and it needs mulching over, and we only had one wheelbarrow. Well, that's going to take a while. So we visited the classrooms and asked what children knew about wheelbarrows in their garages. So we had 19 children raise their hands and say, yeah, we have one of those. And the next Saturday, 17 of them showed up with a parent to spend the day, or at least the morning, as I recall, hauling compost to cover the beds for the fall. And as soon as we moved, and then the other thing, I think the week we moved into the school, we planted, the beds were all laid out in 100 square foot rectangles. We planted 4 beds in spinach. Well, a month later, we had a sale, fresh spinach. We could have sold a whole garden full of spinach. I mean, the people were lined up. It was nice. They came to buy the produce, which they still do, but to a lesser degree these days, I think because I don't know why that is. It's just that it's different. I want to say eating habits,
right? Locally grown produce available now. I mean, in the 90s, I think that was
And I think that it buying the fresh, the buying, having a produce sale was another aspect of the garden that was kind of fun. Mm-hmm. The children liked planting it. They liked harvesting. They liked setting up the display. They liked making the charts. They liked manning the cash register and counting the account, counting the money. Yeah. So, I mean, that was, you know, that was just another one, something that they loved. But the wheelbarrow was something. And when we had open house at the school at the end of the year, the garden was just jam-packed with people. But I remember the parents all standing around watching a family of gophers building a hole in the garden. In our welcome garden. It was so funny because they were all fascinated. These gophers were so busy. Well, of course, these gophers felt safe. They were safe in our garden. And so, but that was the thing. The other thing is, I may have mentioned that Suzanne Fraser's husband is a graphic designer and an artist, Craig Fraser, and he designed the logo for our shirt. I don't know whether I mentioned that, but he designed a picture of a child with a wheelbarrow and an immense pumpkin. And he has a very stylized type of art. So it was on our shirts and sweatshirts. I mean, I have a really old one. It's old, it's soft. The other thing is that the children, when we moved into the garden, we wanted the children to design a great big welcome sign for the garden. And because it was known as, it couldn't be the children's garden. It had to be the Mill Valley Children's Garden, which was inclusive of all the schools. Uh-huh. That was what, you know, again, connected with the sharing of the garden. But the children designed this wonderful big sign. It was probably, well, 6 feet by five. It was big. And a parent that was a Lucas film artist painted it with the children's help, and it was wonderful. I think it's kind of probably faded to behind the shed these days.
Well, I was going to say, is it still there?
It was pretty weathered. Uh-huh. So it was, because it was 1990.
Okay. Do you have photos of that old sign?
Probably. I brought some photos, and I'm still looking for more.
Yeah, great.
But anyway, it's a very special place.
It is, and it's nice to know that it's still going in whatever way it is, how it's evolved, but it's still, you know, after however long that is.
Well, 1990, 2000.
Almost
30 years.
Into the future forever. Mm-hmm.
Well, one thing that the parent who's now in charge of the garden has done, she has developed a foundation for the garden called Friends of the Children's Garden, and it's a 501c3 in which she's working with a team of parents to fundraise, because the garden is of the size that it does need physical labor. Mm-hmm. Aside from the volunteers, it does. Because it's a big project,
have to look that up.
It's alive and in progress, mm-hmm. and I couldn't be more thrilled. And actually, it's one of the happiest, you know, most fulfilling experiences as an educator. The involvement in the advocating and the developing of this outdoor learning lab it's been wonderful. It's been very, very special.
I can tell that it's a legacy that you treasure, and you know, it's wonderful to see that somebody can have that legacy.
Well, I think
and to
that,
meet you.
Well, I hope I do hope that I think that the teachers and parents it will find its way to evolve, mm-hmm. and I'm sure that it will mm-hmm. progress. Mm-hmm.
Great. Are you ready to move on to some other areas of your life?
Oh.
Maybe you retired 20 years ago, at least. And you haven't been sitting at home watching TV, I don't think.
Not really. Not really.
What have you done since 1997?
Well, when I retired, I wanted to go and sit quietly somewhere. Uh-huh. Well, that didn't So what I did was I gardened in my own garden. I had an opportunity to read a lot. I had an opportunity to practice. I played classical piano, so I wanted to get back to piano, so I started lessons again. And I, in addition to that, I realized after a while that what I was doing, because I was so busy and with people all the time in teaching, that what an interesting experience spending time in a quieter, more reflective way. I enjoyed my own home and my garden, and I do travel a great deal and enjoy that. After 7 years, I realized that I missed community again. So at that point in 2004, I joined the Outdoor Art Club. So I've been very busy in that. They have garden tours.
Into depth, I'm just thinking, if somebody is listening or reading your oral history who doesn't know about the Outdoor Art Club, could you just briefly describe what it is?
The Outdoor Art Club is a women's organization which was formed in 1902 by a group of 35 very civically minded women who wanted to save Mill Valley from having all of the redwood trees cut down, to kind of be an environmental conscience for the city. And so it was formed in 02, and they built a clubhouse at the corner of Throckmorton and East Blithedale 2 years later, and that's our clubhouse. It's on an acre of land, and it's just a beautiful site. It's a site of many weddings and activities that can be rented. But the big thing is that we have a very active organization of 400 women and plus long-term people have been in more than 40 years. We have a group of those ladies. But we have weekly speakers, civics and conservation, literary. We have the Secretary of Defense. Now I'm going to forget his name. He was there yesterday. But we have speakers, we have luncheons, tea, we have many activities. And it's a very active club, and it's all volunteer. It's just a very, very busy place.
So you were inspired and probably happy to join that organization. And what happened?
I joined it in 04. I became involved in the garden tour. Should we guess on that one? The garden tour. I was transportation chairman the first year. The second year, I was in charge of the whole thing. So it's like, okay, here, we're back in the saddle. Mm-hmm. After that, I became the grounds director for 3 years and was in charge of the maintenance, the organization, and the planning for the entire site. And I did that for 3 years. And then they said, do you want to be president? So actually, a couple of years, I became president in 1911, 1912, and was president. It's a year-long term. So I was president and have been. So I was basically on the board for about 7 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm currently very involved in the bylaws and very involved in the fiscal advisory aspect of the club, in addition to enjoying the different interest groups. Mm-hmm. So because we have lots of interest groups. And so anyway, I'm very involved in that. And I'm stepping back a little bit to do a little clothes designing and that. And
another part of your creative side.
Yeah, it's an interesting outlet. In college, I took a class that was the hardest class I'd ever taken. But it's getting together with a group of outdoor art club women, and we kind of help each other. So that's
Do you see a business out of this? Are you starting a business?
Oh no. No, this is purely personal. Okay. I want to sit and be creative if I can. It's interesting to see what interest is and how that group helps each other with projects and so on. So I am taking a sewing class here at O'Hanlon Center separately. So that's just something I'm doing. But I have, for the last 30 years, I've traveled a lot and have enjoyed every moment of it. I'm very interested in cultures, history, and geography, geology.
Are you doing Rhodes Scholar type trips? Or are you?
Yes.
What's a trip you've taken that you would like to talk about?
Oh, golly. Well, I have done many overseas adventure travels and Grand Circle. And I did a Rhodes Scholar. I took my granddaughter, and we went to Italy for 3 weeks at Christmas. And that was it was wonderful because it was intergenerational. And she had her kids to hang out with, and yet we just had a great time. I've taken some trips that I think have been very, I've been to Bhutan, and I spent a month in Bhutan, and people usually go to Bhutan for 4 to 7 days. But I was with a UC alumni group, and it was very, very, very interesting. I've been to New Zealand and done the Milford Trek, Milford, Rootburn, and Queen Charlotte. Love that. I did the, I was in Crete and worked on a dig with the Greek, with UC Berkeley and the University of Greensboro, North Carolina. So I worked on a dig on the town of Moklos on the island of Crete. That was an interesting summer. Yeah. And I guess one of the most fascinating things, I'm very interested in, I love art. And there was a film done about Chauvet, a 37,000-year-old cave of wall art that was sealed off by an avalanche. It was discovered in 1990. And it's in southeast France, and they built a $60,000 replica. It's all digitized. It's all just an exact replica because, of course, it's this magnificent, magnificent cave. It's in it's in the southeast. It's on the river, the Ardèche River, and going there with a leaky foundation, where friends of mine they invited me to go, and it was like, I was only in France a week that time, and it was just like, oh my gosh,
can you go back?
Oh, I want to. Oh yes. But it's like, there are a few places left I want to go. But anyway, I've been to South America, the Galapagos and Machu Picchu. I'd go back to Machu Picchu, because we hiked in, and it was just like, these are just really memorable experiences. But these were I started this because after my kids were out of school, then I just took off, and I traveled with friends and family, and we had a wonderful time. So I count myself very, very fortunate.
Uh-huh. Yes, and you have lots of plans for the future, I imagine.
Sewing.
Sewing.
Okay. No, I do. There are several places I want to go. So
good. That's exciting. Do you Do you want to talk any more about your family members? You've talked about two grandchildren, I think.
Okay. Well, I do. I have a son who lives in Nevada City, and he recently remarried, so I'm very happy for them.
Okay.
But he is one of these outdoor mountain kids, a master mechanic. He's into cars and the mountains, and they live in Nevada City, and he has a son. And that grandson is a caterer in San Francisco.
Yeah.
So he's leading a different lifestyle.
Uh-huh.
And my daughter and her family live in Seattle. And my granddaughter, who's 18, is a freshman at Chapman University in Southern California. And she's just so excited. She's just quite a student and quite interested in everything. So I'm delighted. So I have a small family.
Yeah, small, but
close. And my brother Paul does live over in Kensington in our family's home.
Oh, wow.
So.
Wow. You're both stayers then. You said you've lived in your home for 55 years.
Yes.
And he's lived in his home for more than that.
I've lived in two places in my life, Kensington
and here.
Wow. And it's like, I said to someone recently, well, I'm stuck or I have a problem or what. They said, well, it's not a bad place to be stuck, as far
exactly.
as.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
I do feel very blessed that I landed here in Mill Valley, of which I used to ride my bike to school when I was teaching or walk.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, it was just also doable.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's see, before we go to another topic, what's your daughter's name?
Jill Elise Nickerson.
Okay.
Or Flynn.
Married name. Huh?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And then I was just going to ask you, you live near Boyle Park. And mm-hmm. That's a wonderful neighborhood.
Sure.
Any stories about being in that area?
My kids spent a lot of time playing down there. There used to be, I fell down maybe 10 years ago, there was an immense oak tree. And it tumbled.
Mm-hmm.
But I, other than the fact that we lived there and we were on this little street, East Manor, it was kind of tucked away and it was just an ideal place, close to the park and close to school and so on. I will say, it's interesting, when my daughter got married, we had the reception at the house. And what happened was they walked up from the car, the limo carrying them couldn't make it up our street. And so they had to walk from Boyle Park up. And so there was a whole procession going up the street, I guess it would be Sydney. Yeah, up Sydney Street. And old neighbor. Oh my gosh, they remembered her when she was little. Yeah. But anyway.
Well, expanding beyond Boyle, maybe one last area to touch on is 55 years in Mill Valley or something mm-hmm. like that. Maybe more than that. You've seen changes.
Oh my!
Anything in particular that comes to mind?
Well, traffic. Well, when we moved here, it was a rusty, dusty little town. There was a slower pace. There was a wonderful German bakery. There was a creamery downtown. I think it was before La Ginestra even moved into that site. The Curtis Photo Gallery or the Indian Photo Gallery, which burned down. But I think there was one stoplight in town, and that was right at the Camino Alto Blythedale intersection. That was the only stoplight. The other thing is that we used to go down, right where the parking lot for the recreation center is. There used to be a corral, and we'd go down and watch the horses. We'd watch them practice dressage and do, ride. And so that was there, and there was mm-hmm. this little tiny kind of, it looked like a shed. That was our recreation center. And so that was very, very different. I'm trying to think.
besides the Creamery and the La Ginestra, are there other places downtown that you used to frequent?
Well, there was, what was it? It's come and gone. There was a bookstore. There were two elderly ladies who had a bookstore in about the location where La Ginestra and Edwards were. But you had to climb ladders to find books. And they were they were these charming elder ladies. Wow. There was an across the street next to Throckmorton, this Throckmorton Theater, was a yarn shop that had wonderful yarns. And there'd be a group of elderly ladies, but not necessarily elderly, but always a group sitting around knitting. And, I will say some little thing about the Outdoor Art Club is that I think they named the streets and Sycamore and Catalpa and so on. And then there was they used to pay the children a penny to collect worms, the tent caterpillar, the oak moth worms. And there were things like that that were kind of funny little stories. Oh, by the way, the Outdoor Art Club was, if I might digress on that just a second, was the first library in town, a place where we housed the first library. It was a baby clinic. I think when there were fires, that became a place where they took care of people. And I do remember downtown getting my library card from the old
Carnegie Library.
Yes, the old library. I have that card still. It's wonderful.
Do you? Wow.
I love it. So I used to go there and go through the stacks, and it was just quite an experience. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to think. Let me see. What would be different? Well, there used to be Old Brown's store that has come and gone. There was Demetros frame store at the end of this, the end of Throckmorton, which is now a brewery or a beer place.
You know, last year's History Walk that you mentioned earlier, we talked about a shopping center that was on East Blithedale. Quite close to Sycamore, close to the intersection with. Did you shop there? Yeah,
well, I'll tell you what was there when I moved there was a Cadillac dealership, uh-huh. or there was a dealership right at the corner of Throckmorton, Blithedale and Sycamore, and there was a car dealership, there was Lawson Dyer Pharmacy, there was Straub something or other, now it's a furniture store. But it was, I remember having them help me with something about the house, so I can't remember, but that, it was a hardware store.
There was a hardware store. I'm not sure if it was still there.
Oh, there was 60s. Barney's downtown.
They had a extension or a second location, apparently, in that shopping center at some point.
Okay.
Yeah. And Food Mart? Was the Food Mart still there?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yeah. Which would have been convenient to you.
Oh, yes, it was. There was. You're right.
Yeah.
I forgot about that one.
It's a kind of shame that went out of business.
Well, it was small. It was wonderful, though, because they knew everybody in the neighborhood. And that was so nice. But, you know, when my children were babies, I could call the Mill Valley Market when my husband was out of town, and they would deliver my groceries if I got into a jam. But the Food Mart was something, and Jerry was the meat guy in the Mill Valley Food Mart, and he was helpful. I remember I was looking at the meat one day and frowning, and he says, "Now, wait a minute, that's not allowed. I wasn't supposed to frown. Let's have a smile."
Okay.
Oh, oh. But, you know, kind of taking care of everybody's mood and so on. But thank you for mentioning that. Yeah. I'd forgotten that there was more than just the dealership, which has evolved to the printing and to the now, who knows.
Right, but they've restored the look kind of the look of the dealership to the building, which is going to be interesting.
I like the improvement. I mean, it was in needing some renovation.
So
I'm trying to think of other places in Mill Valley that, I mean, I remember shopping at Safeway. That was, 55 years ago. It's the same Safeway. Mm-hmm. I keep thinking they'd upgrade or do something. But I love what they've done to TAM.
The high
school. TAM High. Uh-huh. What they've painted it and kind of spruced it up. And my kids loved going to school there. It was a wonderful education for them. Mm-hmm. My daughter's a graphic She's a graphic designer and an event planner. So she has her own business in Seattle. And anyway, but they loved TAM.
Yeah.
And my son played football and my daughter played soccer.
Yeah, of course.
And I know that these, some of these things are just, people are very busy with these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's an integral part of the community, I think. And obviously you took advantage of that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. But it's a very special place to live. It's a special place to have taught and to raise my children.
That might be a good way to wrap this up, unless you have anything else that you think we should be sure to include in this.
I don't want to ramble on.
It's been really fun talking to you, Susan, and thank you both for sharing your history, but also for what you contributed to the town. It's quite a legacy.
Everyone does what they can, and I've certainly enjoyed my life and what I've done.
Great.
Thank you. Okay. It's very nice talking with you, Nancy.
All right, we'll end it there.